everybody. It's Beyond the Matrix with Patricia Corey, the program that compels you to get out of the box of conventional thought and to soar in the free thought zone of unconditioned mind. And every week we try to bring you people who whose message is that very thing, to how to, through their experience, through their books, through their teachings, how to awaken to what lies beyond the, don't want to say humdrum, but certainly the limits of conditioned experience. And so we're going to have a good time tonight with a new author who I'll introduce in a moment. But before I do, I would like to remind you that I've got a lot of exciting things coming up. I've got England and the Crop Circles coming up in July. We've got 8 places left on that trip. If you're interested, you need to get in touch with me at info@SyrianRevelations.net. And lots of exciting programs. I'm going to be in all over the planet in these next months. So be sure to keep tabs on me at the website. And by all means, try to get yourself to join in on some of these spiritual journeys, which I have a feeling I'll be talking about with my guest tonight as well. His name is Scott Blum. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Could be Blum. We'll know in a minute. His book that we'll be talking about tonight is Waiting for Autumn. I haven't had a chance to read the book, so he's going to take us through it. Let me introduce you to Scott Blum. Is that the right pronunciation, Scott?
Yes, Blum. Thank you so much.
Boom. Okay. Yeah, we need an adjustment here for the sound, so we're working on our transatlantic communication system so I can hear Scott better. Scott, your book didn't arrive in time for me to review it, so I'm going to give you lots of time today to talk about what the book is all about, how you got inspired to write it. But before we go to that, I'd love you to give us a little introduction, a bio on yourself and your background, basically, before you got into the work that you're doing for Spirit.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. My background is primarily, before I started working with spiritual work, my background was primarily interactive entertainment. So I started world, did some CD-ROMs with successful musicians, including Peter Gabriel, and started my own music website in 1995 called iMusic, which was one of the first music websites. And I sold that to a company in Los Angeles. We were based in Seattle at the time, and they in turn sold it to Apple. But in the meantime, when I was working with them, did a lot in the music industry, and my wife, Madison, started her own line of aromatherapy candles, and that became really successful, so I quit my job in the music industry to work with her, and we were having a pretty strong, Los Angeles lifestyle with 45-minute commutes each way and, you know, just dealing with the hectic city. And what we ended up doing is, in our spare time, we would try to meditate and do yoga in order to live a balanced lifestyle. And after working together for just a few short weeks, we had a heart-to-heart discussion and decided, you know what? What we really want to do is to live this balanced lifestyle of consciousness that we were doing in the off hours and integrate that with our professional lives. And so that's how Daily Om was born, which is our inspirational website that we have. And she began writing messages of inspiration and consciousness and awareness to send to her friends, and they forwarded to their friends. And here we are 5 years later, and we have 1 million subscribers. So that's kind of our main.
Wow! And is this a site that I can link with?
Yes, absolutely. It's called dailyom.com, dailyom.com.
Okay, so did you get that, people? Dailyom.com.
Yeah.
Let's see, by the end of the show, if you and I can exchange links, it'd be great.
Cool. And so, that's basically how we
start by saying you are one of those lucky people that, like me, I have to say, who has found his soulmate.
Yes, yes, that's true. It's a wonderful thing.
So, you know, when we talk about that spiritual quest, so many people, I think particularly women, are really on the search for that soulmate connection. And I just can't help but say that I don't know if this happens very often in the various lifetimes that we live, but it's amazing how we are perennially searching for that half of the flame.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's one of those things that allows us to be whole and then to walk down our path without, you know,
distraction. And to celebrate. It's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so listen, Scott, let's, as I said, I didn't get a chance to read the book. It didn't get here in time, so you're going to have to really walk us through it. I'd love for you to start by giving us just a really good introduction to what the book is about. We know it's fiction. However, I'm quite sure that this is sort of autobiographical in nature, right?
Yes, absolutely. The book is...
Okay, tell us about the book. Just an overview, even in depth, of what you are presenting here, the story and your purpose in writing it.
Sure. So Waiting for Autumn basically is my own personal spiritual journey, and it kind of chronicles many experiences that I have had over the last 20 years. However, when writing the book, I decided not to make it like, you know, a straight biography, so it doesn't look like a journal entry and this happened and this happened and this happened over time. So instead, there was a fictional narrative that ties it all together to allow the book to happen in a 3-month period. And so
the main character is Scott.
Yeah, the main character's name is Scott, and it starts out with me meeting a homeless man in the parking lot of our local food co-op. And with just a few sentences, he completely blows my mind and opens me up to all kinds of spiritual experiences. And after doing that and opening my perception up to live on more spiritual life in general terms, then he delves deep into helping me heal past wounds that I haven't dealt with, specifically regarding the death of my fiance that was killed in a drunk driving accident. So that begins to open up all kinds of different experiences, and he takes me through many different spiritual modalities that helped me heal, as well as then begin to deepen my metaphysical type experiences. So that's kind of the overview.
And now, is this homeless character in the book a real encounter or fictional, representative?
I did have a guru that I worked with, although he wasn't actually homeless. So that's one of those threads that tie it together that allowed it to fit within the 3-month period. Although I have had
this is interesting because I've got a new book coming out, which is called. Oh, I just drew a blank on my own book. It's called Where Pharaohs Dwell, and it's a similar, it's not fiction, but it's also my experience through Egypt and in various time frames and all the things that happened there. So I'm particularly attracted to this format that you've created, and I can't wait to get the book. It's coming eventually.
Yes,
by the way,
I apologize for you
again,
not
let's
receiving
give that title, Waiting for Autumn, and the book before that was called?
Well, actually, that's a complicated answer. So the short answer is Summer's Pass. However, I actually wrote that book second, and although it was released first as a digital-only download, I'm currently in the midst of adding a few chapters to it, and it's going to be coming out in hardcover April 2010.
So, good for you.
Yeah, that is the prequel. In general, the two main characters, Robert, who's a homeless man, and Don, we follow their journey up until they meet me, and that's Summer's Path, which is coming out next year. But Waiting for Autumn.
So in the book, you experience shamanic soul retrieval, which is so popular now, and other modalities of spiritual healing.
Yeah.
Do you have experience in these different healing training and healing paths?
Yes, I do. Actually, soul retrieval is one of the most powerful forms of healing in my own personal life. And one of the things that I like to talk about is when people go through their lives and difficult situations happen to them, perhaps traumatic events like childhood trauma or a loved one dies or something like that. Whenever a very difficult situation happens, we have a tendency to deaden a piece of ourselves and to really try to numb ourselves so we don't feel the pain. And in today's society, many of us actually believe that the less that we feel that pain, the more that we're kind of over it. And in actuality, it's the opposite. If we don't deal with it and don't integrate it with ourselves, it actually not only stays inside of us, but begins to fester, and many difficult things can result from that. So one of the main problems with not having access to our soul. And deadening a piece of our soul in the same way that, let's say we go into shock when we have physical trauma, that's actually a good thing as a temporary situation, so to allow us to get out of that situation without getting bogged down with the immense pain or trauma of it. But that's supposed to wear off. And when it wears off, then that's when we're supposed to deal with it. So
that and the fact that as we get older, because I do soul retrieval with my students as well.
Yeah.
The adult, that little 8-year-old or 10-year-old that was just so traumatized because so much of it happens then as children, can't cope. And as you said, it's almost protective that we have this capacity to freeze this moment in some place in some quadrant of the experience of life. And then be able to go back to it as adults. And you have to remind people that, it hurt. You couldn't cope with it at 8, but here you are 40. Take a look.
Mm.
It's quite amazing work when people finally get in touch with that little, I like to think of it, or like to call it fragments of the soul that have sort of split off and gone into hiding.
Right.
And call it back.
Yeah, absolutely. So you do
this work for people, or are you talking about your own personal experience?
I actually do it for my own personal for my own personal healing. I've done it.
Do you work with shamans?
Sorry, what?
Do you work with shamans?
Yes, I do work with shamans, and I also work. I also do my own work on myself as well. So it's a combination. There's some aspects of soul retrieval you can actually do for yourself, and then there's others that a shaman are definitely helpful. My experience is a shaman has a tendency not to be limited by time, and so I find that sometimes the healing that's done with a shaman sometimes goes into, the present life, sometimes goes in past life, sometimes goes into future life. And, until you have kind of a general understanding of what's going on, it sometimes, leaves your head spinning. But that's why I kind of like to balance having, doing some of it myself where it's directed, and some of it, you bringing in the big guns.
And does the book describe some of these shamanic soul retrieval processes that you go through?
Yes, it actually describes an experience with Robert, the homeless man, who's basically taking the role of the shaman, and so he's doing a more traditional Native American soul retrieval, where the shaman actually journeys back to the point in time with the with the soul with my soul, and then retrieves that part of me in order to bring it back and then integrate it And so, you know, and one of the most powerful things about doing that is that not only do you have access to that piece of your soul again, but you also have the ability to access the wisdom from that difficult experience. Because a lot of times the mm-hmm. universe gives you difficult experiences in order to learn something, you know, substantial and to give you a gift of wisdom. And so that's the other thing that's great about being able to do soul retrieval is then you have access to the wisdom from that difficult situation.
And I would like to inject that I really do believe that we create all of these difficult experiences because, although it's hard for people to own up to that, but if you really think about it, that's when we do our really best work, when we are resolving obstruction and the difficulties that we have in our lives, when we're working through processes, when we reach the place of resolution, that's when we're doing our highest emotional, getting closest to the higher emotions. Would you agree with that?
I agree with parts of what you're saying. I think I agree with the overall sentiment of it. I believe that I think probably our highest good is when we help others. But as far as our highest good,
definitely.
Within
ourselves, I was referring to those higher emotions of joy
right.
and elation.
I see.
Of when we achieve something that's like at the end of the tunnel of difficulty. Some people just look at this tunnel of difficulty and it's like it's just too much to bear. And it's like, yes, but when you get through it, you celebrate your power, your vision, your determination.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I do agree with that.
From this darkness, from this difficulty, come much higher emotions.
Right, I understand what you're saying now. Yeah, I do agree with that, absolutely.
It's helpful when people think about it that way.
I'm sorry, what?
It's helpful when people think about crisis in that way, knowing that on some level they created it to resolve it.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that's hard for some people to understand when you're talking about that you're creating it yourself. One of the ways that's helpful for me to understand is going back before we're born to the soul contracts that we enter into with the universe.
Exactly.
And that's really the time where a lot of these things are created. So it's not like when we're, you know, 4 years old or 25 years old on this particular life that we've then decided to, you know, sabotage ourselves in order for this to happen. It's actually more working in conjunction with the universe oftentimes before we're born in order to map out a destiny that's going to help us on our journey. So, you know, it's a combination.
And to bring in the characters, because so many of us have had trouble, for example, with our parents, one of our parents or both. And I like to think that in my case, I had a difficult relationship with my father. I chose this father because I had to work through forgiveness. And so when it really is, I find it's really helpful for people to consider that they even chose the players because the karmic bind or the karmic knot had to be released. And even though they feel victimized sometimes, knowing that it's very possible they deliberately came in with that parent helps people cope with the underlying problem.
Right, absolutely. That's incredibly important. That the people that are involved are, you know, and the other, you know, everything is primarily an exchange of energy and exchanging energy with members of our soul family that may have even existed before we were born this time and then are now in a different form is absolutely one of the biggest ways that we can work through these you know, karmic issues.
Indeed. And you mentioned ancestral healing in the book. What kind of healing methodologies are you specifically referring to?
Well, I mean, ancestral healing in general, let me just talk a little bit about it in general, and then I can dive into specifically how it works for me.
Okay.
In general, when we were talking about the soul retrieval, about how there's the different pieces of our soul that we don't have access to anymore, and you know, as I was sort of talking about the Native American view, is we actually leave them in different places. Well, when we end, when we come to the end of our lives and we haven't dealt with these issues that have come up, these difficult situations, those issues don't actually go away. They're actually transferred to our children and their children and so on until someone actually heals those aspects that is now affecting the entire family line. And so when a lot of us are going, that are on the spiritual path, are going through and trying to look at deeper and peeling back the onion layers and do a lot of self-healing work, there are certain things that we just simply can't get over. And many times those are entanglements that are from our ancestors that are now passed on to us. And one of the most powerful forms of ancestral healing that I work with is constellation work. Are you familiar with constellation work?
Well, I'm not sure. It might have a different name in my mind, but please tell us, and then I'll be able to tell you if I I understand what you're speaking about.
Yeah. So constellation work. It was created by a German psychiatrist named Bert Hellinger, and essentially what it is basically spiritual theater, where if you have a constellation, there would be a group of people that would come into a healing center, and let's say that we're doing a constellation for you. You would have a particular issue that you would want to resolve, and then you would use the people that came into the session with you to act out certain people that are being affected, or you think are affecting this particular situation. So you would pick a representative for yourself. There would be maybe a representative for your partner, maybe for your child, et cetera. And then they would go in the center, and you would stay outside of the circle and watch this unfold. And then the facilitator would then channel spirit and have different ideas that maybe different people are involved. And that's usually where the ancestral people are brought in. So the people that are brought in don't necessarily have to be currently alive. So it could be, your great-grandfather. It could be a child that you lost, in a miscarriage perhaps. There could be, different, maybe your first love, et cetera, that are brought into the circle, and then they effectively act out the energy around the intention that you've set. And effectively what it does is when you have, as we get further down our ancestral line, we're actually supposed to get stronger and stronger and stronger by drawing from all of the energy of all of the ancestors that come before us. However, if there are some of these issues that we're talking about, as far as, let's say leaving a piece of our soul behind or whatever, there's these entanglements that are effectively blockages of energy that doesn't allow mm-hmm. you to draw from that energy. And so by acknowledging these experiences in a constellation, effectively what you're doing is unblocking these energy blockages, and then it could begin to flow into you, and that's how the healing works. And it's incredibly powerful. I've seen constellations where, there are estranged siblings that haven't talked to each other in decades, and there's no way that the person that wasn't there could have heard about this healing. And then within a week, they would call out of the blue and try to reconnect. It's incredible.
Indeed. And you do mention that some of these are very advanced modalities of healing and shouldn't be treated lightly. And I would like to interject that lately, so much is surfacing with different techniques and whatever. It's really important for people to really know what they're doing before embarking on some of these processes. This is what you say. You talk about this in the book, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's I would say in retrospect, that's probably the main reason why I wrote the book. Is because when I came to Ashland, I moved here. I'm in Ashland now, and I moved here from Los Angeles about 2.5-3 years ago. When I first came here,
what a difference.
I know, it was incredible. Actually, let me back up a little bit. I had my own personal spiritual awakening when I was a teenager. And I had a guru that led me into some very, very advanced metaphysical type experiences. The problem is he couldn't get me out of them once he got me in. And so I was abandoned in some very, very difficult situations in the spirit world. And I truly had to decide whether I was going to stay on this planet or if I was going to surrender and move on. And I did decide to stay on this planet, but the only way I was able to do it is to completely block myself off from all spirituality and all spiritual practices completely. So I couldn't meditate, I couldn't do yoga, I couldn't do anything, because any time I got close, I felt like I was, you know, like a drug addict, and I was getting another taste, and I was going to be sucked in again. And it wasn't until 15 years later, when my wife had her spiritual awakening, that I was able to then kind of tiptoe my way back into it, starting primarily with earth-based spiritual practices like, you know, meditation and yoga, etc. And then as, you know, after moving back to Ashland, which when I had my own spiritual awakening, it was very close to Ashland. And so kind of returning back to my roots, I was then able to open back up to the spirit world and do it in a much safer way. But one of the things that struck me as soon as I moved to Ashland is this constellation work that I was just talking about. And one of the things that I didn't explain, but I think you picked up on it, is everybody inside of that circle are actually channeling the spirits of all of these different people in order to move this energy. And I went to these different constellations when I first moved here, and I was shocked because people weren't really treating it with the respect that I would have expected, because 20 years ago, when I was doing this type of work, you know, it was kind of behind closed doors, and there was lots of ritual around it, and, you know, spell books and all kinds of different things to force you to respect what was happening. But now people were doing all of this really intense work and treating it more like they were going to a spa and getting massage or something like that. In fact, many of the healing centers looked a lot like spas. And even now in Ashland, probably every night of the week you can find the constellation. They're very popular here. But I was...
Well, there is a phenomenon of phenomenonism.
Phenomenology.
That meaning, you know, there seems to be a fascination with... seeing the spirits, divulging one's planet to star connections, something that I'm very fascinated with, as you may know if you've heard about my books. But it seems that it's really people just pop in and out of these other dimensions and often just kind of get off on talking about all they see. And I'm sure you'll agree that when you're opening up these other portals, all kinds of conscious beings are floating around in there or out there, and you have to, in fact, be very precise when you do this kind of work, creating sacred space, containing or somehow, I don't want to use the word containing, but uniting forces to maintain a certain vibration, not just, you know, haphazardly going, okay, let's go for it. Which
right.
I see happening quite a lot lately.
Yeah, and that was happening, when I first moved to Ashland, that was happening constantly, and there were people that would leave constellations, and they would be completely destroyed for weeks and sometimes months, and I've even attended a healing for a constellation that was over a year and a half old, because people were had entities attached to them that they couldn't get rid of. And so it's
exactly. Well, that's what I was alluding to, because... I've been a healer for 30 years, and I've had quite a lot of experiences with these entities. And without wanting to harp on this, it's just I really do remind people that before you start doing intensive spiritual work, you really have to understand that in order to open to this other, to the higher astral, you've got to create sacred space so that nothing can come in that is not of the highest vibration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say,
I had a client once who told me that she just said, please, please, somebody come into me. Let me experience the psychic vision. And I said, are you out of your mind? Don't be calling in astral beings into your being. Very dangerous play.
Yeah, Absolutely. And
so you dove into that in the book.
I do go into it a lot, and that's probably one of the most intense parts of the book is that very dilemma that happens. I would like
that's
to further say, as far as protection goes, that probably the most important thing that you can do regarding protection is to find somebody that knows what they're doing, and the person that's leading you through it is a very clear channel, and they are really responsible for your soul. So you need to treat them as such. And just because they might be the perfect person to guide you through one or two things previously, if you're progressing especially quickly on the spiritual path, like many of us are doing right now, just keep in mind that just because they were a perfect person for some of your healing modalities doesn't mean that they're perfect for everybody. And you really need to check in with your intuition before you get started to make sure that you do trust these people with your soul, because that's what's happening.
Indeed. I think that's very, very sage information, and I hope everybody has caught that. I just want to remind people who are just tuning in a little bit, maybe late, that we're talking with author Scott Bloom. Author healer Scott Bloom. His book is Waiting for Autumn, and his website is www.dailyom.net. You've also got scottbloom.net, right?
Yeah, it's dailyom.com and scottbloom.net.
.com, sorry about that. Okay, great.
That's okay.
All right, so one of the significant threads of the book is learning how to trust your own guidance, which you were just speaking about, when you are discovering new ideas. And I imagine that the book presents quite a lot of new approaches to one's journey along the path. Can you give us some highlights of those teachings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that just going back to our previous discussion about soul retrieval, that when people are going through life and they're deadening a piece of their soul or losing a piece of their soul along the way whenever a difficult situation happens, what happens is we don't have the entire of our soul to draw from, and the soul itself is a window into a very useful tool for this life called intuition. And so what happens is as we, get older and we're 30, 40, 50 years old, and we've given so many pieces of our soul away along these difficult situations, what happens is we have a tendency not to use our intuition anymore to make these core life decisions, but then began to rely on our intellect, which is also encouraged in today's society that using our intellect and thinking things through is the most important way to make something, to decide if we should do something in our life or not. But what happens is we actually don't get a chance to sense what our own personal destiny is. And going back to what we were saying about our soul contract, is our soul contract effectively helps us lay out what is our personal destiny and what is our path in this lifetime. And in order to sense that, that's what our intuition is for, is to sense, are we actually on this path or not? And so one of the first things of doing is to get your intuition back. And like we were talking about before, soul retrieval was the way that helped me a lot. But there are different ways of getting whole again, and a lot of people do a lot of self-healing. But keeping in mind that our intellect isn't the right place to make these decisions, is the core lesson. And then once we do that, the book gives many examples of how I was able to sense, using my intuition, sense that I'm actually on the path of my own personal destiny. And so that's kind of the thread that ties throughout the whole book, is trying to really figure out how do I know when I'm on the path.
Indeed. And, I run into so many people that say that the thing that's really missing the most in their most in their life is that they don't know what their mission is. And this is really a tough one. You've got people that are searching for their soulmates. and distress because there's no love part in their lives. But this is a much deeper concern for people. It's just like really a very existential question. What am I doing here and what is my mission?
Right.
And as people go further along on their path, acquiring experience, more finding more about themselves, but still searching for that inevitable goal of what is my mission. Do you discuss this in the book?
Yes, absolutely. That's what's guiding me through the whole book, and that's what's guiding me through, you know, my life now. Is
what is your mission, Scott?
I'm sorry, what?
What is your mission?
What is my mission? Well, it changes on a daily basis, but at this point, it is coming towards being able to share my wisdom with others, and so that's probably what's led me to talk to you today. And was definitely led me to work full time with De Leon and share wisdom with the world and begin to write books. But I think that everybody has their own mission. I think that in general our collective mission is to leave this planet in better shape than it was when we got here, which over the past couple of hundred years I think we've lost that one thing, which is pretty big. Now, the question is, how do we do that? And, you know, for me, for example, I always thought, okay, I was in the music business, I was an entrepreneur, starting different companies, blah, blah, blah. I thought that my way of doing it was, okay, I'm going to make a lot of money, and then I'm going to write checks to different charities and support all of these different causes that I thought, you know, I really wanted to lead a life that was great and was going to be helpful for others, but I figured that I was going to be able to make more of a difference if I made money and then put that money to use with people that were on the ground doing this work. But the universe didn't want me to do that. The universe said, no, you're supposed to talk to these people directly and you're supposed to help them directly. And it's through, you know, every waking hour is what was, you know, helpful for me. But that's, you know, that is, you discover that by tuning into your intuition. So, for example, if you find yourself in a dark alley in a big city, and you turn the corner and you have this really scared feeling, like, oh my gosh, this doesn't feel right. There's something really wrong here. Well, that's fantastic. That's the type of energy that you need to plug back into, and that's your intuition that's informing you that you know, in this case, something's wrong. But in the same way, the same feeling informs you that something is right. And so when you have, you know, two different choices, or you find yourself, you know, on a daily basis trying to figure out, okay, how do I sense that I'm actually on my path? That's how it begins to unfold, is when feelings like that.
Yeah, it's kind of, we call it the gut feeling, but it really is. You do get that block in the power chakra when it's not right. And then so many times we override it and say, no, this is ridiculous. It's going to be okay. I've got to get a good attitude about this. But the intuition is there. It's always right. You just have to know how to recognize it.
Right. Well, I think a lot of us, and I think part of this is what we're educated to do, is everybody, many people are really caught up in this whole concept of free will, saying, well, I don't want to acknowledge that I have a destiny, because I want to make sure that I'm in control of my own life. And what's the point if I can't make all of the decisions? And of course, we do have the ability to make our own decisions, and free will is a very important thing. However, if we're coming at life every day and we're saying, okay, I want to make a lot of money, or I want to be a talented actor, or I want to, you know, have a nice car, or whatever, we come at our life with these goals, we can actually accomplish those goals. The universe doesn't stop, you know, stand in our way. However, there is this flow that runs by us, which is our path of personal destiny. And if we're fighting against that by doing these things that we think we want, we'll allow ourselves to accomplish those, but at the end of the day, we're going to be completely exhausted from fighting against our personal destiny, A, and B, we won't be fulfilled at the end of the day either. Because when we surrender, and that's really what it's like, surrendering to our personal destiny, what happens is we can float down this stream and get to different parts of our destiny with just, you know, a flick of our wrist and you know, a little waddle of our feet or something like that. And it's not going to take so much energy because we have the entire support of the universe behind us. And so, you know, that's the main difference between between destiny and free will. That of course, sometimes it's great to go ahead and exercise that just for the sake of doing it. But in some ways, it's kind of a waste of time.
A lot of people think that I'm one of them, that a certain quantity of old souls have come into this generation to assist in the transformation that begins with 2012 as, let's say, some sort of time mark, even though I don't believe that anything is that precise. What do you feel about the coming 2012 enigma and how you perceive what the changes will be?
Well, I guess I'm probably similar to you, where I'm not quite sure that 2012, the date, means anything. But I would say that in general, this timeline, this general time, is definitely really important as far as a quickening, where we're all kind of coming together and we're all accelerating our own
enormous
spiritual development. And
it's remarkable how even people who are not at all, at least not consciously following a spiritual path, are talking about how the time is slipping away and the time, it seems like it's not a 24-hour day anymore. People are conscious of this on many levels.
Yeah, absolutely. And just De Leon is a great example. I mean, how, you know, even 10 years ago, would anybody believe that, you know, a spiritual website could have, you know, a million subscribers? It's just not very, it's not very common. And there's a lot of, these thoughts are definitely going into the mass consciousness. And as far as 2012 itself, for me, I believe, although this has been, very tangible, long time coming for the last 25, 30 years, I would say the last 5 years has been accelerating. And I think it's coming into mass consciousness. And if 2012 is anything, it's probably maybe an indication of a tipping point, that around that time is going to be kind of the tipping point where it's clear that it is in mass consciousness. Although, you know, electing somebody
like
Obama.
Yes, I agree. And that, and the fact that it by the nature of it being a sort of a deadline, a conclusion, or whatever, in so many belief systems, it in a sense forces people to start to contemplate the overall situation of the planet, the overall future, if you want, of humankind, getting a little bit more out of their own personal baggage, and by the nature of its globality, getting people to really think about, you know, where are we headed? What's happening to the planet? Where is humankind headed? What does this mean? It's quite a remarkable time. So many different belief systems and religions point to this date. Got to be something.
Yeah, and I think that even if you don't believe in the date, you have to believe that we don't have a choice. That just from a pragmatic standpoint, it's definitely we have to think about all these things now. We can't just think about our own selves anymore. That we really need to think of ourselves as a global organism.
Right. That and, of course, the fact that focusing all this consciousness on the date will inevitably create something on the date anyway, because all of these people fixating on the date, be interesting what happens. All
yeah.
The planets align on that date.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Me too. I'm looking forward to the date. I'm looking forward to getting past the date so we can get on with life after 2012.
Right.
Because it's such a focus at the moment.
Yep, definitely.
Scott, what would you like readers to take from this book? What is the best, let's say, what is your gift that you hope the readers embrace from going on this journey with Scott, the central character of this book?
Well, I think that the most important part of the book is what we were talking about regarding personal destiny. That being able to identify your own personal destiny, And I'd say that the main thing is when I showed all the trials and tribulations of when I believed in it, when I didn't believe in it, and all of those other things, that's actually what happens to me every day. I like to say there isn't a path to enlightenment. There's a path of enlightenment that we choose to be on a second-by-second basis. And I personally, fall off of that path at least, several hundred times a day. And there's nothing wrong with falling off of your path. But the more that you're on your own personal path, the more that you recognize it, the better. And that's the most important thing. And don't get frustrated if you do fall off of it and you say, I felt like I was completely in the flow and then all of a sudden I just hit a brick wall and, I just feel like I'm not, connecting with the universe anymore. Well, that's great. That's fantastic. That means that you're actually conscious of that. And so, since you're conscious of it, then get your intuition out again and get back on the path. And that's a constant struggle. And it's a constant meditation that we all have access to. So I think that's
and a constant commitment
part.
To yourself.
I'm sorry, what?
A constant commitment to yourself.
Yes, to yourself and to the entire universe, which ultimately is the same.
I bring groups to Egypt at least once a year, and people always report. There are always at least four or five people in a group that say, this was so hard. Every possible obstruction came. My ticket, the job. And I said, but don't you get it? The first initiation is getting to Egypt. The obstructions are tests to your commitment.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it truly is the journey that's the most important thing, not the destination, always.
We agree on so many aspects. It's wonderful, refreshing to hear you use the same language.
Yes.
So what's coming up next? You've got Waiting for Autumn, you said, was written first, and the Summer's Path was written second.
Yes.
But have they come out? You've got that one coming up in April?
Yeah, the prequel, Summer's Path, is coming out April 2010. And then the third book in the series will also be coming out on Hay House, all three of them. That will be coming out April 2011. So that's
good. And do you have speaking engagements? Are you out there teaching people?
No, I'm not at the moment. The other big thing that's happened to me is our first child just arrived.
Oh, yahoo!
Yeah, so
congratulations.
Thank you very much. His fifth week birthday was yesterday, so he's definitely keeping me grounded in Ashland at the moment. But we do reach out, to millions of people every day. So if anybody wants to know what I'm doing and what I'm thinking, definitely come to my website. And then if you want to know what my wife is thinking, go to dailyom.com.
No doubt she's thinking life is magnificent with her new baby in her arms. This is wonderful news.
Good for you. It's fantastic.
Oh, this is so great. It's delightful to hear somebody so upbeat and in love with life, Scott. It's really a delight to have you on. Any last-minute considerations or thoughts you'd like to share with my audience?
Well, I don't know. I think the main thing is, I would just like to say thank you so much for doing what you're doing the people that are listening and they want to know what they can do to help the universe. I think it's great to listen to people, like you and to people like me, but at the end of the day, we all have our own way of helping the universe and trust that what you're doing is absolutely the most important thing, not only for you to do, but for the universe as well.
Yes, and one of the most important things you can do, because people do always ask me this, is to be a light. Shine a bright light so that when other people are around you, they feel this power and this joy and optimism and strength. And by nature of that strength and power and light, they raise their vibration up to that frequency and spread the light. That's what if it really comes down to the nut, yes, we've got all these spiritual teachings and methodologies and ideas and concepts, but the bottom line is I humbly suggest we are here to spread the light on this planet and throughout the cosmos.
That's beautiful. Very well said.
All right, Scott, thank you for that. I'm going to, I guess I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I'd love to have you back when your book is out. Will you have your publicist send me a copy?
Yes, that will be great. And thank you very much.
Okay, we'll have a talk about that next time when you're back on. And please give my love and celebrations to your soulmate for your wonderful new addition to the, what did you call it, the ancestral line. We've been talking with wonderful Scott Bloom, teacher, healer, and spiritual soul. His website that you'll want to check out, again, is www.dailyom.com. And you can also check him out at www.scottbloom.net. That's B-L-U-M. He's published by Hay House. I'm sure you can find him all over the place. And he's got apparently quite a lot for you on that site to check out. So for now, Scott, I'll let you go back to your wonderful family. And take this time again to thank you for sharing thoughts about life, spirit, the universe, and what your book does to help us awaken to your visions of a better world. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you so much. Namaste.
Namaste. All right, everybody, let me remind you now what's coming up. Okay, I've got crop circles and the spirit sites of England. I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Geez, if you haven't been to the crop circles, give this one some serious thought. It's a life-altering experience and so much fun. And I'm also teaching my Level 1 DNA workshop for 2 days before the journey. So those of you who have been waiting for a workshop to come up, this is the first one, it's the next one, let's say, that's coming up in Europe and England in particular. That's July 25 and 6 for the workshop, and the optional program follows that. I'm doing all kinds of stuff, you know. I got a book, next book in line, channeled book, the next one you've been waiting for, and this is Talking with the Whales and the Dolphins. And that book is on its way now. So I'm a busy girl, but never too busy to hear from you. So please, please, please check out my site, www.syrianrevelations.net. Tell a friend, tune in, live your life like a star, always brilliant, always sure. The universe is in perfect working order. Bye-bye, everybody. Come back next week. I've got, a really out-of-sight book. It's called 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon. We'll be talking to the author of that book, and I'm sure it's going to ring a lot of bells for so many of you who are experiencing that 1111 fixation. All righty, it's Patricia Corey, Beyond the Matrix. I'll be with you next Thursday. Ciao, ciao!